Hello and welcome back to the Electronic Intifada podcast. I'm Nora Barrows Friedman. On February 24th, Palestine rights campaigners in Copenhagen, Denmark, protested at the headquarters of the transnational shipping company Maersk to demand that it stop delivering weapons to Israel. 20 activists were arrested and police violently cracked down on the protesters using tear gas and batons. Noted environmental and anti-war activist Greta Thunberg was amongst the protesters in Copenhagen.
We're currently outside Maersk, one of the biggest shipping companies in the world, that the last year, only the last year, has shipped thousands of tons of military equipment to Israel to arm them during their genocide in Gaza.
Maersk, for its part, claimed that the cargo at its Copenhagen port did not contain weapons or ammunition, but rather military-related equipment. And they added that they are derived from U.S. policy under the U.S.-Israeli Security Cooperation Program. The cargo has been screened and complies with applicable laws, Maersk said. Meanwhile, a new report by the Mask Off Maersk campaign, which is a project of the Palestinian Youth Movement, along with Progressive International and the American Friends Service Committee, released a brand new report. In late December, we had members of the Mask Off Maersk campaign on the live stream to talk about how Israel could not perpetrate its ongoing wars of extermination in Palestine without a global supply chain to import weapons and other material. Today, we're happy to welcome back two steering committee members of the campaign for an update on Spain's shipment of weapons parts to Israel. Welcome Aisha Nizar and Janine Hourani.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thanks for being here. And just to note, Aisha is based in Oakland, California. She's an organizer with the Bay Area chapter of the Palestinian Youth Movement and is a recent graduate from the Ethnic Studies Master's Program at San Francisco State University. Janine is an organizer with the Palestinian Youth Movement's chapter in Britain. She's a PhD candidate in Middle East politics at the University of Exeter. Thank you both again for being on with us. First off, your response to Maersk's claim that the activists in Copenhagen don't know what they're talking about and there's somehow a differentiation between arms and arms parts there. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, just to give some context around the protest camp. So as you mentioned, Nora, between February 21st and 26th, there was a cut ties with genocide protest camp in Copenhagen. On the 22nd and 23rd, there was scheduled programming at the camp. And then on the 24th, almost 1,000 people from across Europe shut down Maersk HQ in Copenhagen. And the demands of the protest camp and of the action were first for Maersk to stop all transportation of weapons and weapons components used by the Zionist entity of Israel. Second, for Maersk to terminate all contracts and investments that support war and genocide. And third, for the Danish state to implement a full weapons embargo on Israel. Now, as you mentioned, Maersk denies that it is transporting weapons and it claims that it is only carrying quote unquote military-related equipment. And this is because Maersk distinguishes between goods with live ammunition and goods with no live ammunition. So while Maersk does not transport live munition to our knowledge, they transport rifle cups, they transport bullets, they transport military vehicles, including vehicles that rockets are launched on the back of. So they transport all of this military cargo, but not the live munition. And that's kind of why they continue to deny the fact that they are complicit in aiding and abetting war crimes. And I think, Aisha, when you speak about what's happening in terms of the Spanish government, we'll speak a bit more about, you know, how this is in breach of the Spanish arms embargo. From our perspective as the Palestinian Youth Movement, when we say arms embargo, we mean a complete and total embargo of all military goods destined for Israel. And we see this as the bare minimum. You know, what we actually want is a full and total embargo altogether of the Zionist entity, whether it's military goods, whether it's fruits and vegetables, whatever it is. And one way we've actually recently, as the PYM expanded our demands, is by releasing a research report that came in between the live that we had recently and in between the research report we've just released, that talked about Maersk's complicity in transporting settlement products. And so we know that, you know, Maersk is also complicit beyond just military cargo and also transporting settlement products. And what this really reveals to us is that it's basically near impossible for a corporation to be making profit from the genocide in Gaza without also making profit off the entire colonization of Palestine from the river to the sea. It's impossible, you know, to separate Gaza from the rest of Palestine. And that's why this campaign is more critical now than ever in this kind of quote unquote post-ceasefire moment to expose this complicity and to expose that, you know, we've witnessed 15 months of genocide. We've also witnessed almost 77 years of Zionist settler colonialism. And, you know, we as Palestinians and Arabs living in the imperial core have a responsibility to stop the supply chain of weapons being used to massacre our people. And we have an obligation beyond that to also isolate and confront Zionism in its totality and in its entirety. And so this campaign is really kind of a critical intervention in that and making a strategic and timely intervention in this kind of broader context that we currently find ourselves in.
Thanks, Janine. Aisha, did you want to comment on the action in Copenhagen as well?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't able to be in Copenhagen. Janine is based in Britain, and so she was able to actually be there and see what was happening on the ground. But it's really been amazing to see the way that this campaign has taken up. You know, when we actually said we want to enact a people's arms embargo, the logic behind that was that governments weren't responding to us. Like, we saw so many different cities, so many different states support a ceasefire, and yet we saw the Biden administration openly defy that. And then, after so much pressure, he finally used the words ceasefire, but it was baseless because he was still shipping over, you know, millions of pounds worth of military cargo to the Zionist entity. And so we really wanted to push forward a people's arms embargo and actually target corporations that had a role in this. And seeing thousands of people from all across Europe, which is just a place that the PYM is now beginning to branch out into, be able to come to Copenhagen and put pressure on Maersk's headquarters, which we know is where Maersk actually cares about their reputation the most, was beautiful. I was really shocked and blown away by the fact that people are still showing up for Palestine this hard and willing to put their bodies on the line, even, you know, after a ceasefire has been enacted.
Yeah, and just quickly also, like, the action also is historic in terms of the intervention that it's making. You know, for a very long time, we saw two ends of the spectrum. We saw A to B marches that are often kind of people feel like they are demobilizing, often require like liaising with the police. And on the other side of that, we saw Palestine Action taking direct action, you know, here in Britain, you know, smashing up weapons factories. And what the action in Copenhagen really signals is like a raising of the ceiling of what can be done at a mass level. You know, we saw a mass action, almost 1,000 people take, you know, take direct action, and that's only been made possible through, you know, the raising of the ceiling that has been made possible by groups like Palestine Action. And so I think this also signals like a new era of what can be mass, you know, what kinds of actions can actually be mass. So I think that's also like an important intervention that it makes in the broader movement.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about this new report that you published on military cargo flights from Spain to Israel. And with your research, along with the Progressive International and American Friends Service Committee, you found documented evidence that there have been 60,000 weapons parts shipped by air from Spain, much of which is against Spain's own embargo policy on arms. Can you talk about what kinds of weapons parts these are and how you were able to track these shipments?
Yeah, absolutely. So our report documented military cargo flights transporting over 60,000 weapons parts from Spain to Israel between January and November of 2024. These shipments consisted of key components for military operations. 45,000 shipments consisted of artillery weapons. You know, these are like rifles, rockets, grenade launchers, machine guns, and about 25,000 shipments consisted of a classification that they say is parts and accessories of revolvers and pistols. So we tracked these shipments using publicly available data from the Israeli Tax Authority. And so this records imports based on a standardized classification code for arms and ammunition. And so we were able to basically cross-reference this data with flight tracking records. And then we identified a steady flow of military cargo flights departing from Zaragoza Air Base and then landing at Ben Gurion Airport in the Zionist entity. And so these airlines are the typical ones that we were tracking already. They're the ones that usually have contracts with the Department of Defense, and they're known for transporting military equipment. So it was, you know, like Challenge Air Cargo, National Air Cargo, Atlas Air. But I think I should mention that while, you know, some of these flights carried shipments explicitly categorized as weapons parts, what was really suspicious is that our data suggests that there is additional military or something that they call dual use cargo that may also be transported, and that's going to require further investigation. And so what do I mean by that? I mean that there's the term dual use cargo refers to goods that have both a civilian and a military application. So in this context, you know, we were able to identify 60,000 shipments of explicitly categorized weapons parts, but there are still very likely other shipments that are going to fall outside this standard arms classification and could still very well support military operations.
And these components, where do they originate from? I mean, certainly, you know, Spain isn't manufacturing these. I could be wrong. Maybe Spain is. But I suspect that Spain is like an intermediary country for these weapons parts. Can you talk a little bit more about what we know, if we know anything about where these components originate from?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this actually gets at the logic of the Mask Off MERS campaign. So, you know, there's a couple different strategies for holding corporations and governments accountable for aiding this genocide. And really what we did was we started looking at the United States because we knew that the majority of weapons that were going to the Zionist entity was originating in the United States or was either being composed in the United States. So we were able to identify, you know, these weapons manufacturers and then look at specific lines of transportation that were classified by the Department of Defense and then see, you know, what would be the closest port that would, you know, be to this weapons manufacturer. From there, we were able to track through the Maritime Security Program that there are specific ships that can carry military cargo. And so we were then able to establish this routine. And that's how we've been able to check what the bill of ladens are and where they're originating from. Obviously, this is from across the world. Like, this isn't to say that they're not being originated in Spain, but the vast majority, I would say, was coming from the United States.
And how, you know, Spain is violating its own arms embargo policies by doing this. What political maneuvers have they engaged in to circumvent their own laws here? And can you talk about the Mask Off MERS's campaign's efforts to hold Spanish authorities accountable for these weapons parts shipments that are against their own policies?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I will say that, you know, Spain has very strict national laws on their arms embargo. And we're in the process of determining how Spain is going to respond to these findings around the violations of military cargo being transported by air. But I want to be fair and say that there is a very progressive wing within the Spanish government that has been working to enact and uphold this arms embargo. We saw that explicitly when the Spanish government actually rejected the to Maersk ships from docking at their port based off of the research that we uncovered last year, which we haven't seen from, you know, many other countries that supposedly have an arms embargo. And so, you know, I would go as far to say that many, maybe even a majority of countries that actually have an arms embargo on Israel are having it violated with or without their knowledge. And that's because obviously the logistics sector is just as corrupt as, you know, weapons manufacturers or big oil. Like, people don't give them that that narrative, but they really are defying laws on a multitude of levels regularly. And so that's all to say that we have a really big focus on Spain right now. But I think that that's actually because that they're responding to our research and they're trying to actually institute a lot of the policies when these violations occur, and they're stuck within this NATO game. And so this attracts a lot of media attention, but I don't know if I would say that Spain is actually intentionally playing a bigger role in this genocide than, say, any other European country. In fact, when we visited Spain, Podemos, which is like a left-wing party within the government, actually wanted to institute inspections on all ships under the maritime security program that were coming from the United States and docking in El Cáceres. We also saw Esquerro Unido submitted a formal lawsuit to actually ensure that this arms embargo was being upheld and to push for these inspections. And at this point, this is when Maersk actually completely abandoned the El Cáceres port and now is taking all of their ships over to Tangier to then go to the Zionist entity. So we see that Spain has actually financially been hit by this and has been willing to incur that. And so, you know, we need to keep up the pressure on them. And we also need to extend this pressure out to other countries, because Israel is stockpiling weapons for the next genocide. We know that an arms embargo is just as important now as it has been for the past 15 months. And so, yeah, I think that this is the way that we, as like grassroots people, grassroots power, can actually use our research and our skills to force the hand of some of these more progressive governments.
Yeah. Janine, let's talk about Francesca Albanese's office and what you know, what the United Nations office that she's in charge of. She's the special rapporteur for human rights in Palestine. What her response has been, and how you've been working to try and get this on her radar.
Yeah, so in advance of the Human Rights Council's annual session, which is actually currently underway, we submitted, Francesca Albanese put out a call for submissions to her office, essentially for evidence of private corporations' complicity in Israel's crimes against the Palestinian people. And so what we did as the Palestinian Youth Movement was we submitted a report to her office on Maersk's complicity in various violations of international law. So this included things like war crimes, crimes against humanity, the crime of genocide, violations of international humanitarian law, and flagrant disregard of the advisory opinions issued by the World Court on the occupation of Palestine. And so what our report did was that it highlighted Maersk's complicity in the genocide against Gaza, but also Maersk's complicity in ongoing land theft in the West Bank. You know, I mentioned the settlement report before. So when it comes to Gaza, what our report did was it detailed the specific supply lines that Maersk facilitates, and essentially highlights how these components are used in crimes against the Palestinian people. So, for example, Maersk ships part of the MK-84 bombs, which is a 2,000-pound unguided bomb that causes mass civilian casualties. And we connected our research into Maersk that the research team was doing, and basically corroborated it with on-the-ground evidence from journalists that have been basically live streaming this genocide from Gaza. And in doing that, we were able to kind of show that Maersk has enabled Israel to commit this genocide and to deliberately target civilians in violation of the Geneva Convention. Mm-hmm. Similarly, you know, Maersk also ships the Oshkosh tactical vehicles, which, if you guys saw those pictures and videos that went viral of Palestinian men blindfolded in the back of a Jeep. That is the Oshkosh tactical vehicle. These vehicles have allowed the Zionist entity of Israel to forcibly transfer the civilian population, which is, again, is another violation of international humanitarian law. And so through the brave work of the journalists in Gaza, we've been able to kind of highlight Mercy's complicity and use that evidence to highlight Mercy's complicity. When it comes to Maersk's complicity in Zionist land theft in the West Bank, Maersk ships directly to West Bank settlements, and it has relationships with multiple corporations and companies that fortify the settlements. And this is in violation of several ICJ advisory opinions. It's in violation of human rights law, and it's in violation of our people's unalienable right to self-determination. And so what this report does is it kind of intervenes within a broader ecosystem of a growing legal consensus that Israel's actions, and not just its actions, but its very existence, is a violation of Palestinian people's right to self-determination. And, you know, we all have our criticisms of international law, but what this report does really is it uses the tool of international law to expose the hypocrisy of imperialist nations and confirm what we already all knew even before this genocide, which is that this idea of a, you know, quote unquote rules-based order is a farce. You know, we see that the International Criminal Court has issued arrest warrants for Netanyahu, and Western nations have kind of twisted themselves into a knot to try and square their commitment to international law without actual actually committing to a genocide. And even states who have a reputation for upholding international law, like Denmark, mm-hmm. and like Scandinavian countries that like to position themselves as these mm-hmm. countries that are kind of human rights
bastions.
Yeah, that abide by human rights. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Haven't been able to enact even an ounce of accountability. And so, you know, as Palestinians, it was really important for us to be able to publish this report and to expose the fact that the so-called international community has failed our people. And you know, the failure of the world to intervene as tens, if not hundreds of thousands of our people have been massacred, have been starved, have been kidnapped, should be a damnation of liberal world order. And this report is a way to kind of really expose this hypocrisy. And so that's kind of why we wanted to publish this report, not because, you know, we think that the UN is going to be the liberator of Palestine, but because it enables us to kind of further expose this hypocrisy and also take the evidence that our people in Gaza have been producing to set the record straight and to show the world what's been happening over the last 15 months and actually amplify it on a global scale. And so the people of Gaza and the people of Palestine will always be our North Star. And even as we submit legal reports to the United Nations, they still remain to be our North Star in everything that we do. So that was something that was really important to us.
Mm. And it's also important to, you know, put these companies, whether it's Maersk or any other, you know, shipping company or arms manufacturer, to put them on notice, to you know, to highlight that people are watching and mm-hmm. people are reading the manifests and people are connecting the dots and people are writing reports and using, you know, their brains to develop these spreadsheets that really expose the underbelly of this war machine. And, you know, no matter how many impassioned, you know, statements, you know, world leaders post on Twitter or whatever, really what matters is their actions. And so I think that's really important. What kind of process is this now? You've submitted this report to the UN. You have these exposés on Spain. What happens with the report?
I mean, I can go and then Aisha, like, feel free to jump in. I mean, you know, Maersk is a logistics company. And so we can confront Maersk through intervening in the supply chain. And we've already done that. You know, Aisha spoke about how Maersk has been forced to reroute. They had at one point ships that were refused docking in Spain and were stranded in the Mediterranean and didn't really know where to go. they went to Morocco and they had, you know, dock workers refused to handle military cargo. And so, you know, we have already been intervening in the maritime strategy and in this like supply chain of weapons. And we've also, as you mentioned, Nora, you know, taken up these legal and diplomatic routes through, whether it's through the Spanish government, whether it's through Francesca Albanese's office, you know, we've used those tools that are available to us. But in addition to being a logistics company, Maersk is also a corporation, which means we can target it just how we can target any other big corporation. You know, at the end of the day, they're a commercial company. That's one of the reasons why we decided to choose Maersk as a target and not, you know, a logistics company that isn't commercial, that isn't publicly listed, for example. And so we have, you know, a plethora of tools available to us. We have the media, you know, popularizing Maersk through research, popularizing Maersk as a target, popularizing the wins of the campaign like we're doing here on this podcast. You know, mobilization is a really important strategy. We saw what happened, you know, on the 24th of February in Copenhagen. We also saw, you know, over the summer, our LA chapter mobilized against Maersk as well. So Maersk was unveiling its first carbon neutral ship, a methanol powered ship at the port of LA. And they had 2 days of programming. The first day was a press conference, which our chapter intervened in and organized like a popular protest around. And the second day, they were meant to take members of the public onto this green ship. But because of the disruption on the first day, all the tours got canceled and the ship left the port of LA. And so we can see how popular mobilization, whether it's in Copenhagen, whether it's in LA, wherever we are in the world, is also kind of can create this popular pressure against Maersk. You know, we often say Maersk is everywhere, but so are we. And so we need to be thinking about ways we can confront them wherever they try, and whether it's greenwashing their image or whatever it is they're trying to do. Another avenue we have available to us is organizing labor. You know, workers in Morocco refuse to handle military cargo. And that is, you know, an example of worker-to-worker solidarity. We have seen trade unions put out statements endorsing this campaign and in solidarity with this campaign. We saw the Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions put out a statement in the summer, basically saying that highlighting the importance of intervening in the logistics sector and naming Maersk specifically. Maersk is publicly listed, so there's also a shareholder strategy we can take up. You know, Maersk has its AGM, its annual general meeting coming up on the 18th of March. I'll hand over to Aisha in a second to speak about this, but we've submitted two shareholder resolutions that have been added to the agenda. And so there's, you know, opportunities for us there to create public pressure around Maersk's AGM. And also, you know, the tried and tested tools of boycott and divestment, you know, whether it's city councils that have investments in Maersk or have ties with Maersk, whether it's universities, MIT has a huge partnership with Maersk, whether it's cultural institutions. So actually in Copenhagen, there's this foundation called the A.P. Møller Foundation, which is run by the same family that own Maersk, and they give philanthropic funding to arts and cultural institutions across Denmark. We've identified at least 12 of them. And so now we're thinking about how we can work with arts and cultural workers in Denmark to get these cultural institutions to cut ties with Maersk. So there really is so many opportunities for us to intervene and to pressure Maersk, whether it's through the maritime strategy, whether it's legal, shareholder mobilization, divestment, sanction, boycott. There's all of these tools available to us. And so we really need to be getting creative. We really need to be thinking about, you know, what pressure points exist in the places that we're organizing, and how can we, you know, make the most and, you know, pull those levers in the places that we're organizing. And this is particularly important in this moment because we've seen over 15 months of people taking to the streets for Palestine. And, you know, at one point in London, we saw 1 million people take to the streets for Palestine. And campaigns like this one are a really great way of taking that street energy into like long-term targeted organizing work. And so that's why we really think that these diverse tactics are really important to employ, so we can take this energy that exists in our movement that we've been able to grow over the last 15 months and channel it into, you know, enforcing a people's arms embargo from below, truly. Maybe I'll hand over to you, Aisha, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, Janine, you I think you really articulated like all of the different strategies, all of the different parts of the kit. I mean, Nora, you could probably tell that we're definitely like steering like in the weeds of everything when you get
a
search or the campaign strategy. But I think like all in all, to summarize, like, you know, we're a youth movement, we're grassroots, we're volunteer, you know, and so we approach this and we've had a lot of lessons that we've learned since launching this campaign. And really, like, you know, right now what we're thinking about is how are we able to disseminate this campaign into the masses? Because we actually want this to be a people's arms embargo. And so how are we able to use our research, our tools? We were literally, you know, using school databases to like come up with this research. You know, all of this is, again, none of us were trained in any sort of research methodology. And but through that, we were able to then create these reports, submit to the United Nations. You know, we're now being listed as a BDS target. And also, we still want to make sure that we uphold the political agenda that we have as the PYM and as the Mask Off MERS campaign, which is, you know, a liberated Palestine from the river to the sea. And right now, what's really important is that we're actually forwarding the arms embargo angle as well. Yeah. So, you know, I think that we're going to see a multitude of divestment campaigns that are going to come up on a local level now that it's being listed as a BDS target. And we need to make sure that we're also able to continue pushing for an arms embargo. You know, Maersk, if they divest from the settlements, that's not going to end our campaign.
Right. And there is an International Day of Action coming up. Can you talk a little bit about that and what and how people can plug in? You know, if people don't live near a port or they don't know how to get involved with something like a Mask Off Maersk campaign, what are the steps?
Yeah, so you can, if you want to get involved in the campaign more intimately, you know, we do have a network and you can follow us, you can get in contact with us from the Mask Off Maersk website. It's maskoffmaersk.com. And you can submit we have a form on there, and then we'll get in contact with you. We can talk through different strategies and different ways that you can take up in your locale. On March 18th, we will be having a day of action. The specifics of that will be announced online. So you can follow us at the Palestinian Youth Movement or at the Mask Off Maersk on Instagram. And we will be announcing all of the details about this day of action soon.
That's great. You know, finally, before we end, if you both could maybe talk about how we can assess the growth of the Mask Off MERS campaign around the world and how, you know, really these kinds of actions can inspire other, you know, grassroots campaigns. I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, when you were talking about the workers at the port in Tangier, here in the San Francisco Bay Area, for years, there's been really incredible, steady solidarity by the International Longshore Workers Union in not just refusing to unload Israeli cargo, but making it possible so that Israeli ships cannot dock at the port anymore. Talk about, you know, this one campaign and kind of how it feeds into other areas of solidarity around the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Local 10, you know, here in Oakland is a perfect example. They haven't had a Zim ship dock at the Port of Oakland since, what, 2014 now, I believe?
That's right, yeah. Yeah,
2014. Incredible. And then over this past, you know, genocide over the past 15 months, they also voted in a resolution that actually said that they support an arms embargo. And so they're refusing to handle any military cargo that's destined for the Zionist entity. And, you know, through our research, we've actually been seeing thus far that that's genuine. We don't see any faults in that whatsoever. And so, like they've put their money where their mouth is, basically. Mm-hmm. And there's a history of obviously internationalism within that union specifically. When we look back to Vietnam, we look to Cuba, when we look to apartheid South Africa specifically. And so I think that it's really a model that we should be bringing around the world. But You know, in the case of Morocco specifically, we saw popular protest from not just workers who refused to handle the cargo, but also just everyday average Moroccans. And the chance that they were saying was Spain rejected it, Morocco accepted it.
Mm.
You know, and I think that that was, for me, it was really powerful because it actually showed where the masses were at in comparison to where their governments were at. You know, it's one thing to have an Arab country that normalizes with the Zionist entity. It's a whole other level to then allow the facilitation of, you know, weapons shipments during a genocide. And so, you know, I think that what we're seeing is actually the role that workers play in this specifically. It's going to have to take a lot of sacrifice. Like, I don't want to be naive about that because we've seen that these workers have been threatened to be fired, suspended without pay, prevented to unionize, actually. And so we're, you know, trying to support as best as we can and, you know, on the ground there. But there's definitely going to need to be an international call for worker solidarity to take up campaigns like this and to actually forward an arms embargo. We saw how effective that was with South Africa. And I think that it's time that we revitalize that specifically around Palestine.
Yeah. I also think, like, if the last year and a half have taught us anything, and if the people of Gaza have taught us anything over the last year and a half, it is that, you know, the masses are the makers of history, and we can't, you know, wait around for, and we already knew this, but we can't sit around and wait for governments or the political class of any country to enact an arms embargo. And we need to be, you know, enacting one ourselves. And I think, you know, to answer your question, Nora, in terms of how this fits into the broader ecosystem, I think that when we decided to wage this campaign, we really were trying to think about what are strategic sectors to be able to actually intervene in the supply chain of weapons. And logistics made so much sense because logistics is basically the arteries of imperialism. Like, there is no way that imperialism can function without these logistics companies. And so, you know, we also know that Maersk is the industry lead. So whatever Maersk does, the rest of the logistics sector follows. And so if or when actually we win this campaign, we will be making a strategic intervention in a sector that imperialism relies on to function. So this is actually like a grassroots movement of Palestinian Arab youth that are playing an important role in confronting Zionism and also in confronting imperialism. You know, to quote Ghassan Kanafani and the importance of strike wherever you strike it, you serve the world revolution. You know, targeting logistics is a way of striking imperialism. And so that's kind of how this fits into broader Palestine and broader like anti-imperialist organizing. So we really see this as playing a critical role within the broader struggle for liberation.
So beautifully said. And once again, give us the websites that people can go to for both Palestinian Youth Movement and the Mask Off Maersk campaign.
Yeah, I'm just going to actually look this up just to make sure I'm giving the exact.
I do the same.
MaskOffMaersk.com. I was like, yeah.
Great.com.
Yeah.
Great.
MaskOffMaersk.com. And then the Palestinian Youth Movement on Instagram. You can follow us both there and you can stay up to date with the campaign.
Wonderful. Well, please keep us posted, obviously. There we go, MaskOffMaersk.com. And I really want to thank you, Aisha Nizar and Janine Hourani from the Palestinian Youth Movement and the Mask Off Maersk campaign. Thank you for all you do. And please keep us posted and come back anytime. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes.